Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Yeah, I watch Formula One. I love Formula One. I watch every race. I was lucky to be there in part of that world. I still work for the French TV Canal Plus.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.
Yes, welcome along to the Hurling Power Rankings, and I'm here with your guide to the Hurling Power Rankings, as always, Mr. Will O'Callaghan. Will, how are you?
I did enjoy someone in the comments last week, Michael went, yeah, I mean, they're just like Will's opinion. And I'm kind of going, I'm not sure if this is a roundabout Big Lebowski reference.
That's just like your opinion, man.
Or somebody has just got the idea of the Hurling Power Rankings and went, actually, yeah, they are just Will's opinion.
Yeah, and they're a load of shite, really. No point in watching them. Mm. But anyway, Will is here, who's very happy because Offaly are in the top three in Leinster and have knocked Kilkenny out.
Top six in the country, yes.
We'll see what the Power Rankings say. And we've also got Rachel Sheehan, the cat who got the cream because Cork are sauntering their way to the first All-Ireland in 22 years. 21 years.
Stop that now, Mick. I said I better not go into studio just in case, you know, I'd glow too much in front of you.
Well, we've lots to talk about when it comes to Cork. A grand performance, I suppose, considering they weren't playing against anybody. I'm not going to talk too much about Clare. I can let you do it if you want. But
I think you should.
We are here on our Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA. It was the last round of the Leinster Championship, the last round of the Munster Championship, all 11 teams in action. Well, all 10 of the 11 teams. It didn't make any sense for 11 teams to play in one weekend. Waterford obviously had already played their last game. But it obviously means some movement in the Power Rankings. Let's have a look at the first page. And this is an incredible sight. And if you are just listening, I will go through them. In 11th place, we have Kildare. In 10th place, we have Wexford. No movement there. In 9th place, we have the Cats of Kilkenny, the team who just 11 years ago wrapped up their, how many? This is their 11th title of the century in 2015.
Ooh.
10th maybe. And
oh yeah, I think you're right, because Cody finished with 11, didn't he? Yeah,
yeah, so that would have been 11 in 16 years in the start of the century. Since then, none, and so much so they have dropped to 9th on the Hurling Power Rankings, and they don't have any chance to move up again this year because they out in 8th place, going ahead of Kilkenny despite not playing, is Waterford. 7th place, still for another little while anyway, All-Ireland champions, Tipperary. And in 6th place, there was not 4 years ago did they lose the semi-final of the Christy Ring Cup. They didn't even make the final, never mind didn't get promoted. And now here they are in the last 6 of the country and will in 6th place in your Power Rankings.
Yep, thank you for ringing up that dark day of November 2020 when a penalty shot from Owen Cahill. I wonder what
became 2020.
It was 2020
okay,
November,
that's,
yeah.
I was 2 years
six
off
years
there.
Ago,
six
yeah.
years ago, fair enough.
His penalty went through the corner of the net in Norrie.
God, Owen around that long, is he?
Yeah, and basically the goal wasn't given and off he lost the penalty shootout. And that year, both teams in the final of the Christy Ring, because they were restructuring, went up. So it was effectively a promotion playoff. That they
all right, okay. We won't dwell on the bad all
since then. It's obviously moved on quite nicely. Won the Joe McDonough, won the All-Ireland Under-20 Championship, got the finals in both the All-Ireland Minor and Under-20 as well during that period. And it's been an upward curve. And as we mentioned last week, the vast majority of the players from that Under-20 team from a couple of seasons ago have now transitioned onto the senior team. And they have overperformed to expectation in the Leinster Championship. As much as this is a story about, you know, Kilkenny and the miserable run that they've had, the reality is that Offaly ended up finishing up the group with just one defeat, two draws, two wins. And I think very, very worthy of their place in the All-Ireland Series.
Rachel, it says something. Will's like an old soul. Like, he's a journalist first, a sports fan second, you know, and an Offaly fan third, I would say, you know, and it's like Westmeath fan fourth, Laois fan fifth, you know, it's like, but like, it's weird. I'm more excited about Offaly's renaissance than Will is. Like, this is the great hurling story of one of the team that, my God, I hated them in the 90s, but in a good way. Like, you never wanted them to go away. They were a proper hurling team. And speaking of, like, success, like I was at the Leinster final as a baby in 1990 when they beat Dublin. And, like, all the way to 1998, 2000, say, All-Ireland final, and then off a cliff. Yeah. And for now, 25, 26 years later, for them to be back at the top table, like at the top table to a way that I still think the losers of the Munster final will fancy them.
Yeah,
but you know, but it is. It's great for the game that they're back. We'll talk about the who they knocked out probably in a bit more detail. But I think let's give Offaly their flowers first.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't forget Dublin fan. Dublin fan fourth, probably, Mick, I'd say.
It was hard and fourth this week, Rachel. Come on, you boys in blue. Was my call at about 5-2 on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I can understand you're just trying to keep it a little bit under the radar, Will, but get excited about it. Like, if it wasn't for the other results over the weekend, it would have been absolute headline news, and it's probably best for the Offaly team that that's the way it went, you know. But you could even hear towards the end of the game that Oofalia ringing out around the crowd, and they probably didn't have great attendance at the start of the year, but you'd imagine after the last couple of performances that'll really pick up now, especially going into the quarterfinal.
Yeah, it's a good point on the support, by the way, because Mick has obviously pointed at 1990 there. So Draken Kelly would have been captain back then, and he's actually been quite sick in recent years. He had a blood cancer, which he's been fighting against. He was in the crowd, and I believe he was saying afterwards about 4,000 Offaly people of the 5,000 that were in attendance. So people travelled with a bit of expectation after the results recently against both Kilkenny and against Wexford, particularly the win the last day, which had opened the door for Offaly to qualify on the last day. So I think everyone was incredibly aware. I mean, there's this idea on the commentary on GA Plus that was maybe they're checking the radio to see if Dublin had won. I think in this day and age, your smartphone was out and it was fairly clear that Dublin were going to get home against Kilkenny. But still, there was a very much a sense of relief and excitement when Offaly finally got over the line at the end of the game. And importantly as well, a really professional performance against Kildare in the weekend gone by, because Kildare ripped into that game for the first kind of 10 or 11 minutes and there was a lot of physicality. But after the red card and after Brian Dignan picked the goalkeeper's pocket for the goal, it just all kind of relaxed a little bit after that. You know, end up putting up 129, which is a big score in total as well. And who cares who it is of Limerick or Cork at this stage? Offaly have 4 more weeks to prepare for a big game. And first All-Ireland quarterfinal, 2003.
Yeah.
Been a long time.
There you go. And they were probably on the way down at that point. And there was a point in hurling where you couldn't help but get into an All-Ireland quarterfinal. But look, it depended on length or draw and so on. But like, if you look at just a brief mention of Kildare, it was thin air for them in the Liam McCarthy. I think we probably always knew it would be. But at the same time, I think they went 5 games. They never got a hammering. Like, they high enough score to Kilkenny, but a lot of that came late. I think they never got a 70-minute hammering anyway. I think they've a lot to be proud of. And look, what you have to do in this scenario, if you're a Kildare, the highest they've reached in modern hurling, is to learn a few lessons. They're in 1B again next year. They were good in 1B in the league this year. Stay in that division again and win the Joe McDonagh next year. And then you can start to dream of bigger days ahead. Like, you know, so I think they were actually a credit to themselves. And it was actually nice to have a new team in the championship. Now, it's going to be kind of, Carlo or Leash again next year, which is great. And they're teams that you feel like can kind of make an impact, which is class as well. But at the same time, we're used to them and we're used to Westmead, and adding Kildare to that mix is only good for hurling and a stronger kind of second tier that's there. And lastly, on Offaly then as well, I think the trajectory of their season, I think, is just something worth mentioning as well. As you said, a professional performance against Kildare, absolutely, that's exactly what you want. But when they needed the key game was the Wexford game, they put themselves in a position with the 2 draws. They knew that if they beat Wexford, they'd likely beat Kildare. And then it was up to Kilkenny to have to go and win to get ahead of them. And, you know, we didn't know that Kilkenny should have been probably underdogs in Parnell Park with the way the year was going. So Offaly just took care of business. I think coming from behind and beating Wexford well in the end is actually the key performance for me. It's a key indicator that they're not, like, just lucky to be in this position, because they got a couple of, they caught Dublin on a bad day, they caught Kilkenny on a bad day, and here you go. They went and bet Wexford in Wexford Park when they needed to.
Well, I was listening to Di Regan on Monday on Off the Ball Breakfast. I thought he made a very good point. And it is, I suppose, one of those reasons you probably temper expectation a bit ahead of playing either Limerick or Cork. Awfully, because of their age profile and because of the size of some of the players coming through as well, are probably going to struggle physically against some of the teams. But where they've hurled really well this year is where they've been both evasive and pacey, and when they've run at teams, which is what they did in the second half against Wexford a few weeks ago, and it's what they did against Kildare when the game opened up a bit at the weekend just gone by as well. There's some very, very skillful athletes on that team. They're not physically the biggest team around, but I think it suited them a lot better playing in the Leinster Championship than it did playing in the league earlier this year, where it is difficult to try and bridge that gap. Now, if Offaly are going to get to a point where they can maybe contend against some of those teams that are further up along the line, they might need to just get to a point where physically they can match it a little bit better. We'll talk about Dublin in a second. That's one of the things that Dublin can do, where they've got like size, pace, power, a lot of that through their team, where they can disrupt some of these teams that would be traditionally a little bit further up the ladder. I think that's maybe where Offaly's ceiling might come from. I am very, very happy with a team with an average age of about 23, 24, getting to a point where they've qualified for the All-Ireland Series. And hopefully now this is a point where Offaly are no longer looking at the trapdoor when it comes to the Leinster Championship. And now yearly they look at potentially getting to the top
10. Yeah, and look how much they've learned over the course of a seven-game league and or six-game league. Is it a six-game league and a five-game Leinster Championship? They're a completely different team than they were 11 matches ago. Like, you know what I mean?
Offaly are all about championship, Mickey. So
I know that.
Football against Down at the weekend, the Tailteann Cup as well. First win against Down since the 1980s, and then they go on qualifying the hurling.
They just haven't been at this level for very long, so they do have to kind of learn a little bit as you go along. Tipperary, by the way, I don't know, we've probably said all we have to say about them, but that's a poor year. Who would have thought that we'd have them seventh on the power rankings at the end of the season? But it's overshone by Kilkenny in ninth place, and let's talk about it. Will, the Harvey Norman stat of the week coming from Kilkenny.
Yeah, one they wouldn't want to have attributed to them. But 1996, this is their earliest exit from the championship since then. They went down on the June bank holiday weekend that year in a quarterfinal against Wexford in the Leinster Championship. Now, since then, they only missed out on four finals in Leinster since the year 2000, which again shows, I guess, the success under the Brian Cody era, but also how that's been carried on. Six in a row for this team. You know, first year that they haven't been into the Leinster finals since 2017, and first time they haven't qualified from the group stages. So you can argue all you want about the fact that the Cats have run out of lives, and maybe this has been coming for a while, and they've been on a downward trajectory, really, since the mid-2010s. And all of that is probably true, despite the fact they got to a few All-Ireland finals in that period. The reality is that this has been a fairly sharp fall off for Kilkenny to get to this point, because, like, realistically, there's a fair amount of wiggle room to get out of the round robin. And the reality is that Kilkenny have not been good enough. I did feel for Derek Ling after the game, like he could have a very emotional figure when he was doing those interviews afterwards. You could tell that he was crestfallen. But I thought they were fairly short on ideas when it came to the game at the weekend just gone by as well. And almost when Dublin increased the intensity level, Kilkenny weren't able to actually push on and get back ahead. I know the penalty obviously puts them into a decisive lead, but the reality is that Kilkenny didn't lead after the 20th minute of the match, so Dublin actually controlled it from that point on. And this is very un-Kilkenny-like. We spoke a lot about Kilkenny's record against Dublin, and so many times, and Joe Canning said, I think, just before the match got underway, you know, Kilkenny usually find an answer. Kilkenny usually find a way when the backs are up against the wall. And the reality was the answers were sorely lacking on the weekend just gone by. So their earliest exit from the championship in three decades.
Three decades, right. That's the Harvey Norman stat of the week. But Rachel, I think Will said that they had very few ideas there. That's a nail on the head for me, because when I'm watching the match, towards like in the last kind of 10 minutes when you're thinking Kilkenny are out of the championship here, there's no way back, and you realise Dublin haven't really scored like in about 10 minutes here. You know what I mean? They had a couple of wides and they were kind of, Brian Hayes was winning every ball, but they weren't doing anything with it. And you're like, why have Kilkenny not done anything? And it was just like,
they
were just launching balls in. Yeah, Dublin gave them a window to put up 4 or 5 points and make it a game. And I think they might have got two in that time. Like, they just did not take advantage of it. And they just seemed, and it's a weird thing to say about Kilkenny, clueless.
Yeah, I think if you'd watched back a couple of Kilkenny performances this year and you were able to take the jerseys away from it and you just watched a team playing, you'd never attribute that, even the ferocity, with a Kilkenny team. And I think their like prestige and their heritage all along, for me, I was like, they'll come back. You know, even yesterday, I was like, they'll find a way to win because they always have. But if you actually just looked at the hurling that they've been doing, especially yesterday, those closing minutes, like, it's unforgivable. You might have said at the start of the league, they're feeling some things out and they're trying this, but just an absolute lack of ideas. A Dublin defence that was on top, like, you know, Brian Hayes cleaning up as a bit of a kind of sweeper back there. TJ Reid, you know, he did his best, but like, you can't be relying on him either. The narrative that they're completely gone away when you hear the fact that they had six consecutive Leinster titles in a row.
I know.
It doesn't really add up either. It's just that they weren't at the levels that we'd expect them, you know, in the early noughties.
But I agree. But we're talking about them almost in ninth place here, and deservedly so. And I kind of, there was 3-4 balls in that period that I'm talking about where they were caught between a shot and a ball in, and the ball went 20 yards wide with a bounce. You know, like the worst shot, the worst ball you could hit in hurling. And I think they did it maybe three or maybe four times in a kind of a 10-minute period towards the end of the game. And you're like, what are you doing, lads? I think Paddy Deegan hit in maybe two of them. You know, and that's an experienced, good hurler.
Yeah,
TJ is worth mentioning here because TJ, I thought, was one of the best Kilkenny players.
Him and Owen Cody were fighting against the light themselves.
Yeah, and you'd expect it to be from Owen Cody. No matter how good you are, it's not a good sign if you can't live without a 38-year-old forward, no matter how good he is, because they had to move him out wing forward in 25, 26-degree weather at 38 years old. Dignan mentioned it on commentary. And just like, this isn't like what, like this isn't TJ's fault. TJ's proved himself absolutely the right idea not to retire because Kilkenny desperately need him. But Kilkenny shouldn't desperately need him at this stage.
No, and the thing is, I think we debated this a little bit in the hurling pod this week as to whether, you know, you want to keep TJ around for another season and continue to play him in the role that he had this year. You need an operating group of forwards around him to be working. Now, if Adrian Mullen comes back in and he kind of goes into that little pocket around the half forward line, obviously they missed him for nearly all the year. Like John Donnelly's form and Mossy Keown's form was not where it was the season before. Like,
yeah,
yeah, they weren't at their form of last season. Yeah. But if you don't have that type of supporting cast, it becomes way more difficult to let TJ be the bear around the square and let him be the guy who's finishing chances. Because as you mentioned, so you've not got the scoring return from the other players. You've not got maybe someone being decisive about their shot taking. And what happened with Kilkenny was their half-back seemed to get on a reasonable amount of ball in that second half when Dublin went back a little bit into their shell when they were leading. And it was a case of they weren't sure whether to shoot or they weren't sure where to try and let it in long. They kind of did a mix of the two. And really and truly, I kind of didn't get the feeling that Kilkenny were going to come back. I thought that Dublin held them off.
I never felt
enough.
Yeah, I watched it in a pub with, like, I wouldn't say the most vociferous Dublin support. They kind of saw me watching the match on my phone and decided to change the channel off Sky Sports News. But people did watch it, and everyone who wanted was there wanted Dublin to win. And, like, there was a kind of a relaxed nature to it. It was a bit ole ole, like, you know, whereas the nerves you would normally have, this is a team that don't beat Kilkenny very often and have hurled away so many games in Parnell Park against them. Great crowd, by the way.
Yep.
Kind of had a look at whether I'd go to this game because I couldn't get down to Cork and no tickets available. Parnell Park looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sun helps every day. All the grounds look great on Sunday, didn't they? But anyway.
Just on the tickets as well, where there's a big opportunity. Sorry, I'll let you know 1 second, Rachel, when I think about the tickets. Leinster for the final have made 20,000 free tickets available for kids. If you want to get them, you can book them in groups of 10 through your club. One adult has to be there for every 10. But particularly where there's a wave of Dublin support now, I think there's a great opportunity to get loads of people in for the Leinster final. It's the second year in a row they've done it. McDonough final, of course, is part of that doubleheader as well. If people want to go, it's a great opportunity to go. Sorry, Rich.
Yeah, no, just on Kilkenny, I think actually being knocked out at this stage could be one of the better things to happen to them rather than qualifying for maybe another All-Ireland semi-final, say, and they get beaten by the All-Ireland finalists again and there's not a hard look at themselves. It's like what we saw with Clare against Limerick. You know, they played so badly, they had to reassess and come back with that performance then against Tipperary. So it's almost better for them.
So.
it's nearly almost better for them to say, right,
good point.
You know, yeah. This really isn't working. We need to make wholesale changes. I was thinking, I don't know how long Brian Dowling has left at Kildare, but would he be someone if, again, not to use your term in the hurling pod, not to retire anyone, but if they aren't sticking around, would Brian Dowling be someone to come in on that team, I wonder?
Has to be in contention, given what he's done with Kieran's and what he's done with Kildare, given what he did with the Kilkenny Camogie team. Like, he has the CV at this stage. If he wanted to go back into his own county, which I'm sure he would, like, it's the biggest job possible if you're a Kilkenny hurling person. I would imagine that Henry would be in contention as well.
It has to be Henry.
You know, like at this stage, the fact he's gone back into the system working with the under-20s this season, again, he's going to be a big live contender for it. I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult one. Like, it's a really difficult one for Derek Ling. Obviously, he shook up his management team last year by bringing in Niall Corcoran and bringing Eddie Brennan. So obviously, they felt that they needed to make a bit of a change. I think some of the key personnel that were missing this year were a big blow as well. Not having Hugh Lawler, not having Billy Ryan.
Yeah, but why were they not there, Will? And I don't mean that people, they're amateur sports people and they have to live their lives, but why does a 29-year-old multiple time all-star, best fullback in the country, go travelling at that age? Like,
I thought you were going to go
full, you went travelling at that age, you know what I mean? I understand it, but if you think there's an All-Ireland,
I wasn't quite an all-star,
if you think that, not far off, if you think there's an All-Ireland there to be won, you hang on a year,
you don't
you? And I think Hugh Lawler and Billy Ryan, but like Lawler in particular leaving, I think said a lot. Now, we're making assumptions there. There's lots of reasons for everybody to do things, but for me, I just at the start of the year I was on breakfast with Tommy Walsh and said to, and just I was like, that does not bode well for me for Kilkenny, because he doesn't have a million years left. This, if he thought it was an All Ireland there to be won, he was gone. And look, as it turned out, they didn't even get out of Leinster. So I think the point about them not being able to lie to themselves anymore, because I have to say, Clare played Kilkenny in consecutive All-Ireland semi-finals. They hammered us the first day. It was a weird game. I think there was more eyes on Clare the second time. Clare, I think, probably... Oh, sorry, 3 years in a row. And like Clare threw it away the second day and nearly threw it away the third day. But it was all about Clare not getting over the line rather than Kilkenny, for me anyway. And then even last year, they could have been in an All-Ireland final. I haven't been impressed with Kilkenny in years.
They found a way,
but they got away. That Galway haven't been at the races. Dublin haven't been at the races. You start off in a semi-final when that's the case.
Yeah.
You know, and Dublin and Galway have picked up. But if we go on to page two, I think it might be time to talk about the other side of that match, because we've got... This is contentious enough now, I have to say, because we'll get to the top two in a few minutes. Dublin in fifth place, behind Galway, who are raging hot favourites for the Leinster final.
Oh, I agonise about 4 and
Dublin
5
Dublin beat them in Salt Hill already, and I think deservedly so as well. And it's always very well. When Dublin beat anyone, it's always because the other team are off. Clare remain at 3. I'm going to hold my hands up and say that's controversial, because they've taken two of the biggest beatings I've ever seen Clare taken this year. But they have been to Limerick at 2.
They're an enigma.
And Cork at 1. Clare, they are an enigma, and they'll probably have another day in them against one of 4 or 5 next time. But let's talk about the Dubs. County story of the week this week, because they backed up, I think, the quarterfinal from last year, the Limerick game. And in some ways, what happened against Cork in the semi-final almost took the credit away from Dublin and what they did in like what was the hurling story of last summer. Mm-hmm. And then for them to go this year, start off poorly enough, I would say, should have been beaten by Offaly. But the way that the last two performances, for them to go down to Salt Hill and win where only they can do, and then to actually finally get over the line, and so deservedly so, and put in I thought a brilliant performance, Rachel, against Kilkenny.
Yeah, it was interesting with all the post-match talk from Niall and the Dublin players. It's like they just completely took the emotion out of the day altogether. Every one of them referenced they had a game plan and they stuck to it. This had nothing to do with knocking Kilkenny out or finally getting that victory over Kilkenny. I don't think anyone really mentioned it, bar maybe the media, how long it had been since Dublin beat Kilkenny. To them, they just took it as a game, which was, I think, was really interesting and a great sign for them that it's a really pragmatic approach. They're not basing things off history, but
yeah.
It was such a good performance. And you mentioned Parnell Park. I was in Parky Rin on Saturday for the Cork and Meath game, and you can see like Parky Rin to the Cork footballers is what Parnell Park is to the Dublin hurlers. You know, it's becoming a fortress. It's smaller. Like if that game had been on in Croke Park, you know, there would have been no atmosphere, but the chants going around the place, everyone getting behind them, and like, everyone loves a bandwagon, you know, in the best way possible. So I think the support is only get stronger and stronger. And as Will mentioned, the 20,000 tickets available, you'd imagine a lot of those would be scooped up from a Dublin point of view.
Yeah. 2013 all Leinster final. Mm-hmm. I was there. It was a really, really great occasion. Dublin beat Galway well that day. What was the Munster final that day? Or that weekend?
Was it Limerick and Cork?
It was Limerick and Cork, yeah. It was Limerick winning a breakthrough Munster championship down there. Yeah, so it's just interesting that same teams in the Munster and Leinster finals as 2013. Who won the All-Ireland that year? Yeah. Anyway.
I thought I was leaving that for you to jump in there, Rachel, and you didn't. So let Mick have his moment. Let him have his moment.
Yeah, but Limerick did win and Dublin did win, if that's any omen. Mm. If we're looking at 2013 comparisons, that's what we look at. But, like, again, I just think quickly on Dublin, because we're actually running slightly out of time, but I mentioned kind of them. I think that's a good point about them not talking about the pressure of beating Kilkenny, but that's actually a sign that they've got their house so in order, because there are teams that would wilt in that face of history and so on and not getting it done, but they just did their job well. I thought, like, you look at, like, John Heatherton, like, a completely different performance from him, mm-hmm, than he would have put in kind of like on the edge of the square, and he was shown for everything. He won some amount of ball.
He came out to the left wing position, pirouetted and put it over on his bad side. It was a
twice
fabulous score.
But like that one in particular that he did was unbelievable. But he had 4 points, two off one side, two off the other. He hasn't appeared to me in the 10 odd years that we've seen him as that kind of hurler.
Yeah.
But he was able to do it all, and they're all just playing with such confidence. Brian Hayes had won those games. Look, we all overrate the spare man. We all overrate the sitting back six. It's the way it is. They're on a huge amount of ball. The game is designed for them to be on that ball. And to be honest, in the second half, sometimes he didn't use it that well. You know what I mean? So I do think it's one of those ones where we might be talking about too much. But his ability to kind of just read the play and get on it and all that.
And
he's had two unbelievable games in a row now. We could have two Brian Hayeses on the All-Star team this year if we're not careful, and that could be very confusing.
Yeah.
But he was brilliant, I thought. Donald Burke, for me, just looks like the Donald Burke of a couple of years ago. We didn't know that was still going to be there. We still haven't probably seen the best of Keane O'Sullivan. Fergal Whiteley was unbelievable. Paddy Smith has really come into his own since he's got a little bit of cover in front of him. They didn't have Liam Rush. You know,
I was worried about when I saw Owen O'Donnell coming in.
Owen O'Donnell to come into a bit more form, you would say. I thought they have hurlers everywhere.
Yep.
Goalkeeper is good. You know, like
his distribution is fabulous.
It's absolutely superb. I am really impressed by them. And the longer I see them, the less I think somebody is going to have the Dublin game in the All-Ireland Championship. You know, and it's an awful thing to say. And Limerick thought they had it that last year and didn't. But look, that's what history has been. You get Dublin, you're looking, you know, you're fancying it. If Clare are playing Dublin the next round, if Galway get over the line, and I'm not sure Galway are going to get over the line in the Leinster final, I don't fancy playing Dublin.
No. Last 14 months, they've beaten Galway, Kilkenny and Limerick. That's what you got to respect. And also I think you have to respect.
In championship, yeah.
Compared to last year where they shipped goals against Kilkenny, and obviously we mentioned the goals that were shipped against Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final, I think structurally they're a lot better defensively. And you graph that onto exactly what you've just described, the forwards they have at the moment. And like Neil was very quick to point out after the game that it almost becomes a dirty word around Dublin that we say they're so athletic, as in like that's a bad thing, as in he wants to emphasise the hurling ability that we saw from them too. And like those pirouettes that came not just from Hedgehog but also from Ronan Hayes, the twin towers that we talked about before, they're much more than two guys that you just poke the ball up to and see what happens. Dublin had a way of working it through the lines at the weekend. I thought their hurling ability was absolutely excellent. And I just hope their trajectory continues to move
up. And you
up
consider
here.
Putting them ahead of Galway quick?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked, obviously the Leinster final will decide the ranking officially when it comes to that power. But look, Galway have done enough since they got to a point that they knew they were going to qualify. And again, at the weekend, 13 points down against Wexford, but turned it around against a team who were in a dead duck situation. You know, I've done enough, I would say, yeah. Galway in these games.
Rachel, we're nearly out of time. I just said there's two more things to get there, right? Cork, what did you think of the performance? I think like while it was a game, I thought Cork were very good, and then it almost didn't matter after 25 minutes. It was, you were playing against a training opposition.
They won't be able to take too much from it. Like, to perform that well without Dara Fitzgibbon, without their captain, was brilliant. And so great to see Rob Downey back. Like, he was instrumental in how they played. Buckley and Barrett obviously had screamers up front, but as soon as Brian Hayes' goal went in, the game felt over. You know, I think they went 8 points up at that stage a good bit before halftime, and they nearly would have been better off with like a practice match at that stage. You know, an in-house game you would have felt would have been more competitive in the second half. Clare did seem to just kind of drop the heads and lost the run of themselves a little bit. So I think they'll be happy with how they performed, but they can't take too much from it. Like, they were exposed at the back a couple of times as well early on. You know, Ian Galvin had a shot that just went wide, and after Peter Duggan's catch, we had the ball that was stopped on the line, if it was on the line, I don't know.
I don't think it was over the line, but I don't understand how
it happened. Yeah.
I also don't understand how Callahan wasn't pinged for lying on the ball. You're not allowed to do that. Like, but it's a basic rule that you learn when you're 6 years old, because it's the type of thing you'd be inclined to do when you're 6 years old. Like, you know,
like he was using like a stress ball to release his glute or something nearly the way he was on it, in fairness. I'll hold my hands up there. But
it's only a point.
A little bit exposed back there, which they'll have to work on. And if you're playing the likes of Limerick, they'll capitalise on those couple of scenarios. Yeah. You know, they probably would have, Gillan had finished those. So I don't think they can be overly enamoured with the result. But it was, look, I was there in the terrace. It was a great day, even beforehand. Walking, you mentioned the Kilkenny and Dublin result earlier. Yeah. People were talking about it going through the turnstiles because they were so poor in Páirc Uí, and it was even kind of no great shakes. People weren't that surprised.
Yeah.
Just filtering through, but a great day, but not a whole lot to take from it. Shane Kingston was probably the
Point from the sideline, his first touch was a gorgeous one, wasn't it? The trajectory of that ball was just like a slingshot.
And he's just on the pitch.
Yeah.
When he was announced as the first sub, everyone was a bit surprised. I suppose Robbie O'Flynn is injured. You probably don't want to risk Seamus Hannity in a game like that when it's going that way. He just came on, you're like, okay, this man means business. He got a really good second point as well. But I mean, he had time that stage to plant his feet. So it's hard to take it realistically. But from a Clare point of view,
as embarrassing as a performance ever, I suppose a few days on, you start to think of it differently and you say, look, this is never going to be the team. This is a very old team. It's never going to be the team for the 2 weeks in a row. And, you know, it's the 4 weeks now and then or 3 weeks, whatever it is now. And then, it's every 2 weeks. You know, there are performances in this team. But I think Will's been very generous keeping them a three. I have to be honest, after taking those two hidings, they've beaten the, you know, Tipperary and Waterford this year, who I think are 7 and 8 on the rankings. You know, I think, Dublin will have had better performances than that.
They're third base on their upper limit, which is exactly what Shane O'Donnell said after the last against Tip. If Clare get to that level, Clare is still the third best team in the country.
It's hard to see them Clare get three times now, isn't it? And even if they do, based on what I saw in the Limerick and Cork games, I think Clare threw in the towel both times. Threw in the towel is just such a, it has so much connotations. So what I mean is, I think the games were done and they knew and they lived to fight another day. And you don't want to overuse the energy you have and so on. But at one point, they ended up at 116, I think. But, they got 1-4 very late on. I was walking around the kitchen in circles going, there's 60-odd minutes gone. We scored 12 points in a championship game.
One point from your starting 6-4.
It was absolutely insane. And that was after O'Donnell scored, I think, on the third chance on that particular even attack. They were not able to score. They couldn't get kind of going. It was a weird, weird game. But again, do they have another performance? Have we seen enough in them in two games this year to know that they can turn up in the quarterfinal? Yes, but then they'll have Limerick or Cork waiting for them again and we'll have to see what happens after that. But
it's an incredibly difficult path.
Disappointing, very disappointing.
When I saw some people going, this really matter, you finish him in third place, it's no. The path for not getting to the Munster provincial final is very, very difficult.
Tip won the All-Ireland from third place last year. Is the only thing I'll say. But look, anyway, I don't think Clare won't win the All-Ireland. But look,
did Clare do it the year before?
Huh?
Were Clare third in Munster in 2024?
No, that was the third Munster final in a row against Limerick, and it was the only one they didn't show up for. It was extra time the first year, dodgy, not no free in the last minute in the Gaelic grounds, and then hammered by Limerick in 24 and went on to win the All-Ireland. So I do think it takes a lot out of you chasing a Munster title, and I do think Clare probably had that in mind as well. Going to Cork and winning by 4 points seemed a little bit fanciful. I don't know if anybody really believed they did it. So did they really need to be? I just think they have to be judged slightly differently than all the other teams because of their age and experience. And I do think that you have to hit the game at a pitch. And for Limerick and Tip and Cork this year, Clare were nowhere near the pitch. And I think they're kind of old and slow and are going to get hammered when that happens in a way that other teams won't. But they'll be at the pitch for the quarterfinal. They absolutely will.
Yeah, Tony Kelly came off against Tip and he had ice on his ankle at the sideline.
Yeah.
So if he's trying to turn that around in a week, it's no wonder. John Conlon as well, for him to put in that performance against Tip. And you can't underestimate the heat. It was like a stove in Páirc Uí on Sunday. In fairness, you have to add that into the mix as well after the performance they had against Tipperary. Cork had a week off. So thing on Clare, Mick.
Yeah.
Would you ever do, and I will kind of run around for Peter Duggan and get him a new helmet. Every time he goes in for a one-on-one with a full back, the helmet is coming off him.
I hate when players change helmets. It confuses me. I remember when Joe went from the red helmet to the white helmet, it took me 2 years to get used to it. Lads need to have iconic helmets. Never change.
It always looks like the full back is when he probably is nearly decapitating him, but because the helmet's coming off, it makes it look worse.
Alright, listen, the last thing we have to do, we're way over, Brona's giving me the eyes here, but we have to do the Hawkeye moment of the week, which is the close call that got everybody talking. I want to talk about this, but I want to put my hands up and say this is not a gripe on a Clare point.
We were beaten by
16 points and it was lucky to be 16. It should have been 20 odd, right? So this is nothing to do with that. William Buckley's pass for the first Cork goal was the most blatant throw I have ever seen on a hurling pitch. And at one point in the commentary...
At one point in the commentary,
Brendan Cummins went, "Oh, what a pass by William Buckley." By the way, William Buckley, sidebar, what a performance. We should, like, I haven't mentioned him, right? Every single week he's got better and better. He's turning into such a serious player for Cork. But anyway, going back to this, right? An obvious shot. And if you're looking at that, it's the most under... I think referees don't have a clue what to do. They get sick of calling it, I think. But also you get to the point where it's like, if you're looking at that on commentary and you're thinking, God, how did he do that? Well, the reason that is because he's throwing the ball. Like, it's kind of obvious, like, you know, and someone put it up and think, here's William Buckley throwing the ball in 4K, which I enjoyed, like, you know. But look, I think the thing I'll take for this is a hurling-wide problem. I was in a local GAA club for my daughter's nursery training, and the senior hurlers were training beside me on the other pitch. And I was looking in every now and then, like, they were doing a hand passing drill. And let me tell you, in a 5-minute hand passing drill, there wasn't one legal hand pass. And I can guarantee you that there was not one legal hand pass thrown. They were throwing it under lads' legs and all. You wouldn't get away in a match, lads. But I think you will get away with just throwing the ball, because apparently you're just allowed to do it unless a referee twice a game decides, feck it, I'm calling that one.
In the league, is when it'll be
that's
called.
Once a game in the championship. Then.
Yeah, like I've no idea what the solution is to it, because when you talk to referees, they say it's almost impossible to tell it in real time as well.
Because you could tell that one. Now,
I know, that one absolutely. And it was weird that it was almost doubled down on the commentary that was,
it was a great pass, strange replay.
But anyway, the reality is that I think it's very, very difficult to tell what's legal and not legal when these are moving around as quickly as they are. And players have become incredibly good at the release of the ball from their hand and actually flicking it really quickly. And oftentimes I will look at it and go throw, and then you actually see the replay. And you go,
should you have clear separation, and should it be a harder thing to do? And if you're taking away the skill of these lads doing it quickly, kind of so be it. You know what I mean? Because maybe you just change the hand pass rule and make it more difficult. Like,
I don't.
Rachel, as the only active, player in the actual game here, are we being unfair on players?
No, probably not. And I'd say even the referees, they're spending so much time now looking at what's going on in the square, like, to see if players are being held up. I reckon a lot of the time, as soon as there's a player soloing like William Buckley is, the ref has his eyes in the square to see if the corner forward, the full forward, is being held up.
Yeah.
But I know Camogie, even at club level, it's definitely been stamped down on. Like, you'd see a lot in our league games that no matter how many times it has to happen a game, the ref is blowing it. So does that need to come in? Probably, but not right now. You can't bring that in at Munster final, Leinster final stage. If it's something that needs to be brought
not
in,
for
maybe
Cork and Limerick, Cork and Limerick in a game of small ball basketball.
The other thing I don't want to see, Rachel, and obviously you can give us the player's perspective on this either, is that if it became more difficult to hand pass, remember that idea went before a motion that you'd have to hand pass from the other hand. I don't want players getting tied up in tackles either, and just continual rucks and the ball being dropped and that type of stuff too. The actual speed of the game is something I quite like at the moment. And maybe
the other hand thing is bullshit. You've a hurley in your other hand. Like, that's I don't like that at all. But I think clear separation is something that is, like, easier to judge, because if you don't have it, the ref calls it, and if he's technically wrong on the old rule or whatever, it's a little bit
easier.
It'll
encourage players to do it a bit more prominently.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. All right, out of time. It's going to be Limerick and Cork, number one and two, for the rest of the year, and we can argue about everything below them. But yeah, I don't think we'll have a show next week, actually, because there's no hurling next week.
Well, there's no hurling. There's the under 20 final and there's the lower grade finals are on.
So you refuse to put the lower grades into your rankings at the start of the year?
That's me.
He put it in his contract. I'm only going to 11.
Yeah, 11 no more. I think we come back in 2 weeks and we reevaluate around the provincial finals, don't we?
All right, okay.
Well, Ronan can decide.
We didn't talk about Limerick enough in my liking there at all, lads, to be honest.
Well, nobody feckin' saw it. That was the problem.
Jim Furyk decided
not to bother putting it on TV, although 20,000 turned up to the Gaelic grounds, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and look, the fact that Galland scored the goal in the first minute, you kind of thought,
Goals Limerick, I think, is the thing to take from that. But
Aidan O'Connor's in absolute flying form. But I think that William Buckley will be Young Hurler of the Year. Aidan O'Connor is having that kind of breakthrough season now properly for Limerick.
Yeah, tried to wrap 5 minutes ago, but here we still are. Right, see you next week.
See you, lads.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.